Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and welcome to a new year. It's 2015, and a very happy new year to all of you out there, and we'll be here for you in 2015 and hopefully beyond to help guide you in terms of your Intelligent Medicine health decisions. 888-302-3684 gets you into the doctor's office today. This is a live program. A lot of hosts are chilling out, taking a vacation, but I can't think of a place I'd rather be than right here behind this very microphone because, well, I have the extraordinary privilege of being able to deliver hopefully useful information to you about your health. 888-302-3684. We got lots to talk about today. We invite your calls, and we've got lots of subjects to touch upon. One of the things I've been doing over the quiet holiday time, things slow down, and had a little extra time on my hands. I've been watching old episodes of Downton Abbey in anticipation of the new season. I only caught on rather late to the Downton Abbey fervor, so I missed seasons 1 through 3, and I'm binge-watching Downton Abbey. And in just a few moments, I'll share with you a medical perspective on Downton Abbey, because there's quite a lot of history of medicine riffs in Downton Abbey. We'll take a look at those for those of you who are Downton Abbey enthusiasts. You probably have all the lines memorized, and by now, it's after watching hour after hour, I'm sort of speaking with a British accent. Could you please bring me my evening slippers, Jeeves, Carson? Set the table for 24. We're having a few guests over. All right, 888-302-3684. The good news. Well, here, first of all, for some of you, it's a bad news, good news scenario. Well, let's start with the bad news. For older adults, that is individuals over 55, oh my goodness, I guess that makes me an older adult. A new study suggests that the most significant predictor of whether you're going to live or die of mortality is not, as is often thought, your body mass index. Your body mass index refers to how fat you are. If you have a high body mass index, that's precisely the definition of obesity. A body mass index of over 26 is borderline. A body mass index of over 30 or 32 is considered morbid obesity. And according to this study, the body mass index doesn't have much to do with whether you're going to live or die. In fact, there's some studies that suggest that you're a real skinny mini. If you're frail, you might be higher risk of dying than your prosperous looking peer who is a little more zaftig, who has a little more reserve on their body. But muscle mass is the key determinant of longevity in older adults. They define that as greater than 55 in men and greater than 65 in women. And this is based on a large study in the American Journal of Medicine. Now, this may be an example of correlation, not causation, because generally healthier individuals are able to maintain muscle mass. And what the study authors caution is that this does not necessarily mean that everyone should pump iron and get huge muscles, and that's necessarily going to help them live longer. But I have a feeling it would. And precisely that's what I was engaged in this morning. I had a little extra time before the show, and I went to the gym, and I did some exercise. Especially, I got a little more into the weight room. Yesterday, a lot of time on my hands. I've been doing a lot of running and swimming and spin classes. So I decided to get in the weight room and deal with my neglected muscles a little bit, did some bench presses. And interesting, here's the good part of it. This is the good. a lot of people were very excited when I post this on Facebook, because it's pretty hilarious. Mind over matter. The brain alone can tone muscle. This is a very peculiar story. The study was published in the Journal of Neurophysiology. And I'll set the stage for you. You know, I was in the gym the other day, and a gym buddy of mine was lying on the weight bench. He was literally lying there motionless, apparently exhausted after a bout of bench pressing. And I was kind of kidding him. And I said, you know, if you just lie there, if you just lie there thinking about lifting the weight, your muscles will get bigger. And he looked at me and he laughed. And actually, what I said to him, there's a kernel of truth, according to a new study. Here's what they did. Ingenious researchers at Ohio University wrapped a single wrist of two sets of study participants in a cast. So they all got a cast, immobilizing their muscles for 4 weeks, which, by the way, is not a great idea, because you will get muscle atrophy if you do not move. Even routine movement, even light movement, not necessarily lifting weights, but just merely flexing your muscles to, you know, lift something off a table, or, you know, maybe move a pan on the stove, that can help your muscles. But their muscles were completely immobilized. One set was instructed to sit still and intensely imagine exercising for 11 minutes, 5 days a week. Just imagine exercising. And more than just casually daydream about going to the gym, participants were instructed to devote all their mental energy towards imagining flexing their arm muscles. But it was mental energy, because their wrists were immobilized in a cast. The other set of study participants weren't given any specific instructions. Well, pretty amazing. At the end of the 4 weeks, the mental exercises were 2 times stronger than the others who simply didn't think about it. Researchers did something else. They used magnetic imaging, MRIs, to isolate the area of the brain responsible for the specific arm muscles. Because there's actually, you know, that's what happens in a stroke. You could knock out a certain part of your brain and your arm is paralyzed. You knock out a certain part of your brain, your leg is paralyzed. Well, they actually isolated the part that's responsible for moving the arm muscles. And what they found was that the MRIs showed a stronger brain. The mental exercisers had more fiber pathways that connected the brain to the immobilized hand. So the researchers conclude what our study suggests is that imagery exercises could be a valuable tool to prevent our slow muscles from becoming weaker, even when a health problem limits or restricts a person's mobility. So the good news is, you know, whether you made it to the gym or not. By the way, the gyms are mobbed. They are mobbed. I go to the Y, and there's a little drop off, you know, toward the end of the year, parties and everything, and the place is empty. Like, January 1st, gym is open. Everybody's there. They're repenting. They're beginning their New Year's resolutions. So gym memberships are offering specials. Be careful, though, because what they may do is, capitalizing on your New Year's resolution zeal, they may sign you up for a year membership. And the gyms are smart. They know that exercisers who sign up in January are notorious for not following through. So they overbook by about tenfold, because a gym's capacity may be, you know, say 1,000, and they'll sign up 10,000 folks, knowing that only 1,000 people will show up by the end of the year. So make it a, you know, be realistic, make it a monthly membership. We've got some tips for you coming up later in the program. We're going to talk the top 10 resolutions you can actually keep for 2015. We'll assist you on your way to a healthy new year. 888-302-3684. That's our number for Intelligent Medicine. We invite your phone calls. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Did you know that doctors recommend omega-3 essential fatty acids for kids and grown-ups alike? Nordic Naturals, the number one fish oil in the U.S., offers omega-3s for everyone. In fact, Nordic Naturals has one of the largest product portfolios in the world. Our best-selling Ultimate Omega is available in soft gels or liquid, both with a light, clean lemon flavor and no fishy aftertaste. This concentrated formula has been clinically shown to support heart health. For children, kids everywhere love Nordic Naturals Children's DHA, offered in great-tasting strawberry liquid or chewable soft gels. New Omega Boost is a creamy, delicious formulation of omega-3s. With its great mango taste and velvety smooth texture, Nordic Naturals Omega Boost is a great choice for the whole family. Nordic Naturals carefully manages every step of production of our omega-3 fish oils from boat to bottle, so you can count on Nordic Naturals to be exceptionally pure, fresh, and effective. Nordic Naturals, for kids and grown-ups alike. Available at natural products retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Heart disease is the number one killer in America, but you don't need to become a statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'd like to share with you that one of the best ways that I found to support heart health is by taking Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Backed by more than 700 peer-reviewed studies, Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract has also been shown to support healthy cholesterol levels and proper circulation. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. Made from 100% organically grown garlic, I recommend taking Kyolic daily as part of a heart-healthy lifestyle. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores nationwide.
A regular dose of intelligent medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684, if you want to pose a question. Downton Abbey is making a comeback. Season 5, it's really been hyped. And what's going to happen to the Crawleys and Lord and Lady Grantham and their daughters? It's it's going to be exciting to see how that family evolves. It's now the end of the Roaring Twenties. The Depression is looming, and so we can expect a lot of plot lines. I've been binge watching Downton Abbey over the holidays and trying to catch up in anticipation of season 5, so I can figure out what the heck is going on. I didn't really know what was motivating all these characters, so now I'm up to speed. And there's a lot of medical riffs that I want to talk a little bit about. This upcoming discussion calls for a spoiler alert. So if you haven't seen seasons 1, 2, and 3, do something else or cover your ears or go la 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 la, while I'm talking about this. Isabel Crawley saves a man dying of dropsy. Now, what the heck is dropsy? The guy has, well, they show a guy and he's got big swollen legs and he has trouble breathing. Dropsy is an old-fashioned word for congestive heart failure. It was very common, actually, in the early 20th century, because a lot of people had valvular diseases of the heart due to rheumatic fever. It would mess up their valves, so people would swell up with water. Their valves wouldn't work. And this is before the advent of valve repair surgery and better drugs, diuretics, and so on to control congestive heart failure. So in a rather improbable sequence, Isabel Crawley, she's kind of an amateur doctor. She's an example of a very, very educated and smart lady who, because of the social norms of the time, was not permitted to get a proper education, become a doctor. Today, she would easily, be a head of internal medicine at a major hospital. But she is just a civilian and a volunteer in a local hospital. And she tells the doctor brushes her off, that there's this new technique by which you inject epinephrine directly into the heart of a person who's dying of dropsy. And in a rather improbable sequence, the doctor finally agrees, because it's like, guy's on his last legs, draws out a bunch of fluid and ejects the epinephrine, and the guy is saved. Okay, well, I got to say, the whole time I'm screaming, give him some CoQ10. Coenzyme Q10, of course, wasn't discovered until the 1960s, and that wasn't around. But coenzyme Q10, magnesium, these are some of the things that could have helped this poor guy. But, of course, this is the year is 1912, and that stuff wasn't around. All right. Sir Robert is a major character, and he everybody gets involved in World War I, and he has a terrible war wound, which leaves him paralyzed. And rather improbably, at first he's paralyzed. He thinks his life is over. And, of course, because he's paralyzed, it's a low spinal injury. It's going to affect his sexual performance. And he's about to marry Lady Mary. And so, he abjures marriage and says, you know, I'm not really a man and I won't be able to fulfill the marriage vows and yada, yada, yada. But gradually, sensation returns to his legs. And he gets up and he starts to walk around and he's perfectly all right. So what's the deal? Is that for real? Well, you know, he got hit by an artillery shell. There was a concussive injury to his spine. I looked it up in the Merck manual. And it says most spinal cord injuries result from motor vehicle crashes, falls, assaults, and sports injuries. Symptoms such as loss of sensation, loss of muscle strength, and loss of bowel, bladder, and sexual function may be temporary or permanent. Keyword is temporary. And I guess it's plausible, though I have to say it's rather rare that someone who has such a severe spinal injury recovers completely. It would have helped if they'd had MRIs in those days, because it was just beginning of the era of x-rays, but MRIs show soft tissue injury perfectly, and they could have really assessed whether he had a prognosis towards recovering or not. All right, Mrs. Padmore, she runs the kitchen at Downton Abbey, and all of a sudden she starts messing up, dropping stuff, and she tries to conceal it, but it becomes clear that she is losing her sight. And so they take her to a specialist in London who says that she has cataracts. And she has cataract surgery, and it's successful, and then she's back in the kitchen ruling the roost. So what's the deal? Is that realistic? Could that have happened in 1915? Well, it says, according to an article that I'm reading here, cataract surgery is actually one of the oldest surgical procedures known. It was first documented in the 5th century B.C., the first reported surgical removal of a cataract from the eye occurred in Paris in 1748. Now, here's the rub. In those days, they did not have what are called intraocular lenses. They took out the bad lens, but they couldn't put a new lens in. And the one improbable thing about that is that Mrs. Patmore would have had to have had Coke bottle thick glasses afterwards to compensate for her loss of a lens. They would have taken out the bad lens. She could have, you know, restored her sight, but she would have had to wear very thick glasses. So that part, not exactly right. Lavinia Swire's death from the Spanish flu. She's mildly ill, and everybody in the house comes down with some version of the flu, some more, some less, and she seems to be about to recover. Then all of a sudden she's on death's door and she expires within minutes. What's the deal? Well, I suspect that what that's about is the lack of antibiotics that were there then. A lot of the folks who died in the 1919 flu, tens of millions of people died, more people than died in the entire combat of World War I, they died not because of the flu, but because they got a super infection. They developed pneumonia, which then was not treatable because they had no antibiotics then. So lots of medical riffs in Downton Abbey. And some of them real, and some of them maybe a little bit of a stretch. 888-302-3684. We might your phone calls. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you this weekend. It's Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative for ideal health. I'm Dr. Fred Pescatore, author and science advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking a high-quality probiotic. I recommend taking Dr. O'Hara's every day to rev up the immune system because it has carefully selected strains of beneficial bacteria that work synergistically to maximize health and improve immunity. His exclusive formula delivers live, beneficial bacteria that are easily absorbed and provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 25 years of scientific research, I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotic is the most powerful and effective probiotic available. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. We got Marianne on the line. Hey, Marianne, how you doing? Hey, Marianne, I used to watch you on Gilligan's Island. Remember that?
Shows my
that
age,
you?
Right?
Yeah.
I wish it was me. No.
Okay.
Okay, I enjoy your show.
Yep.
The reason I'm calling is that I'm 58 years old, mm-hmm. and I have arthritis in my right knee, with a torn meniscus.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And edema also.
Yeah.
So now it's you know, I'm having problem walking. It's interfering with my life.
Right.
My question is, I'm being torn two different ways: cortisone or
right.
these PRP shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you think of each. Which is the better way to go? Which is the success
yeah.
rate?
Well, you know, look. Cortisone injections, I'm not a big fan of, but, you know, sometimes they will get rid of the pain and enable you to rehab. They're not going to fix the problem. They're not going to repair the problem. And, in fact, they may actually thin out or weaken your ligaments. So that's why, you know, you can't really go for a lot of those.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why athletes get in trouble, because they just give them too many of those injections just to keep them out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from what I'm hearing, you're not making, you don't have like a $20 million contract, and you're not trying to play it out and make a lot of money and retire at 35. So you could get an injection of steroid, and maybe that'll relieve some of the discomfort and enable you to do the right kind of rehab exercises to strengthen your knee. Rehab doesn't always work, but it's often helpful, even when there's a case of a tear. Usually we thought, well, if there's a tear, it's a tear. You got to repair it.
Right.
You know, but actually, there's some new think on that, is that that isn't necessarily the case, that you can actually get some functionality and you can get some repair, even of a torn meniscus. And, you know, by the way, the repair is not 100%. And with each subsequent repair, you come closer to the eventuality of having a total knee replacement. So I like platelet-rich plasma. It doesn't always work. And in fact, there's a big placebo effect whenever you get any kind of procedure done. You know, because with the passage of time, things get better and people say, oh, my goodness, that injection really fixed me all up. Well, maybe it wasn't the injection. It was just, you know, the 3 months that ensued
right. And
you'd be better anyway. But platelet-rich plasma, what they do is they take some of your blood and they spin it down and they take out the plasma that's rich in platelets, which have a regenerative effect. So they say, I mean, it's not a technique that I do in my office with my patients, but I hear tell that it's beneficial. It's actually done both by complementary physicians and also at major medical centers by orthopedists and rehab specialists. So that could work. That could help. What really excites me is the potential for stem cells to help with regeneration. And that's in its infancy. They're beginning to harvest stem cells for this. But I think that there are going to be some big advances in the next 5-10 years that really help people to regenerate chondrocytes, which are the cells that make up cartilage in your meniscus and in your ligaments.
Mm-hmm.
But that science is in its infancy.
What is the success rate of the PRP shots?
Maybe, you know, 30%, I would say. But, you know, it's worth a try. It's certainly worth a try. Maybe before you undertake the steroid treatment. I prefer the PRP because I think it's more natural in a way.
Uh-huh.
Because what it does is it actually provides a healing environment. And the healing that takes place is less than it's more natural than the suppressive effect of the steroids. Steroids just put the fire out, okay, and reduce swelling,
right.
Which is good. You know, you got edema, so obviously there's some inflammation, and then steroids could make a difference there. But, you know, work with your orthopedist, find out what he or she favors as the first eventually. It wouldn't be horrible to take one steroid injection, see if you get relief, and then you could graduate to the PRP. Steroid injections are going to provide a more rapid relief than the PRP, in my opinion.
But see, I'm told that first you do the cortisone treatment, then there's another shot that they give you that has some kind of chicken stuff in it.
Yeah, that's the hyaluronic acid, Hyalgan. Yeah, this is like an injection of, it's actually made from chicken rooster combs, hyaluronic acid, which you can actually take orally, but, you know, and will help a little bit for the knee, along with glucosamine, chondroitin, anti-inflammatory things like curcumin and boswellin. These are all helpful. And you may also want to take Wobenzyme, which is a proteolytic. I would go full court press. I would take the nutritional supplements as well as the local treatments. Wobenzyme can be very nice for injuries of the knee, elbow, shoulder, rotator cuff. You know, generally, the proteolytic enzymes break down the fibrin byproducts of inflammation that get into joints and gum up the work, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So we get good results by taking things like Wobenzyme or Vascuzyme. These are products that I have on my website. And you have to take these things away from meals. Unlike digestive enzymes, which you take with meals to digest food, you take them away from meals because they're not designed to digest the food. They're designed to digest away the inflammatory byproducts that you have in your injured joint. So you take maybe three or four Wobenzymes three or four times a day between meals away from food. And that could be something that you could try as well. Give it a shot.
Because I've already tried the curcumin that I've tried.
Yeah, well, been there, done it. You know, your problem has gone beyond that. There's a structural problem and you need to, yeah, okay. So thanks for calling. And let's take a look at this one. This one is an important story for those of you who have kids. Could playing Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker and other music improve kids' brains? You know, I recently attended some friends of ours with kids. Their kids were performing in a junior concert with the musical performances, mostly on piano, but also on string instruments. And it was great. It was held at Lincoln Center in a small auditorium. But it was fantastic. Some of these kids were really young. They would sit down and they had to adjust the piano bench so that their feet barely touched the pedals and they could barely reach to the keyboard. But these kids were amazing. They had great motor skills and they were able to play beautiful little classical pieces on the piano and on string instruments. Children who play the violin or study piano could be learning more than just Mozart. This according to a University of Vermont College of Medicine child psychiatry team. They found that musical training might also help kids focus their attention, control their emotions, and diminish their anxiety. Research is published in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Now, I think this is a big duh, because any activity that entrains a child's brain, possibly with the exception of watching mindless hours of TV, it can't be passive. It has to be active, whether it's sports or whether it's learning a language. Bilingual kids perform much better in school, kids raised in bilingual households. And I think one of the advantages that Asian populations have academically is that they have to master a very, very complex language and alphabet and negotiate two languages to achieve success. And this really helps the brain develop. What they found was that music playing altered the motor areas of the brain. It requires control and coordination of movement, but it was also helpful for what are called behavior-regulating areas of the brain that that control impulse control. You know how impulsive kids can be, but with musical training, the part of the brain that relates to executive functioning, including working memory, attention control, organization, and planning for the future, gets more robust. Cortical thickness improves in brain areas that play a critical role in inhibitory control as well as aspects of emotion processing. This, according to the researchers at the University of Vermont. So very cool, you know. And I wish I had I'd done it as a child. One thing that I regret in life is not having mastered a musical instrument. I have a great appreciation for music, but unfortunately, musically, I'm a klutz. But, you know, dance, music, these are things that really should be cultivated in kids because they will make kids smarter in other realms of life and better able to cope with life overall. 888-302-3684. I'll be back with more health information on this weekend's edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Did you know that doctors recommend omega-3 essential fatty acids for kids and grown-ups alike? Nordic Naturals, the number one fish oil in the U.S., offers omega-3s for everyone. In fact, Nordic Naturals has one of the largest product portfolios in the world. Our best-selling Ultimate Omega is available in soft gels or liquid, both with a light, clean lemon flavor and no fishy aftertaste. This concentrated formula has been clinically shown to support heart health. For children, kids everywhere love Nordic Naturals Children's DHA, offered in great-tasting strawberry liquid or chewable soft gels. New Omega Boost is a creamy, delicious formulation of omega-3s. With its great mango taste and velvety smooth texture, Nordic Naturals Omega Boost is a great choice for the whole family. Nordic Naturals carefully manages every step of production of our omega-3 fish oils from boat to bottle, so you can count on Nordic Naturals to be exceptionally pure, fresh, and effective. Nordic Naturals, for kids and grown-ups alike. Available at natural products retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shop, and other fine natural products retailers.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. It's 2015, and a new legislative season is about to start. Congress will reconvene, and the executive will be back in action. And this means a lot of governmental decrees, because President Obama has said he's got a phone, he's got a pen, and he's got a lot of agencies at his behest. And one of the agencies is the Agriculture Department, the USDA. And this headline suggests what might be coming down the pike in 2015. New diet guidelines might reflect environmental cost of food. And I personally think it's a big mistake, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. The story goes like this. For years, the government has been issuing guidelines about healthy eating choices. I might add, parenthetically, very badly. Right. The food pyramid. What a fiasco. It's made Americans fatter and more likely to develop diabetes. Now, a panel that advises the Agriculture Department is ready to recommend that you be told not only what foods are better for your own health, but for the environment as well. And I say, you're entitled to your opinions, but you're not entitled to your facts, because as I'll point out in just a moment, there's a big fallacy here. The beef and agriculture industries are crying foul, saying an environmental agenda has no place in what has always been a practical blueprint for a healthy lifestyle. So they want it both ways. They want to tell us what's healthy to eat, but at the same time, environmentalists are part of the crowd that's lobbying Washington to achieve their goals. And what they're saying is that we should advocate a diet which is low on the food chain. Foods that are higher on the food chain use up more energy and cause more pollution and contribute to global warming, which, by the way, you know, some people contest as unproven. I mean, there's huge controversy. I won't get into that. But what are called gas emissions, hydrocarbon gas emissions from food production, and particularly high energy production line of beef, for example. It's thought to entail more production of CO2 than, say, a field of plants. Right? Now, that's the theory anyway. So this actually goes back a long time to actually when I first got interested in nutrition, which is the 1970s. Some of you might remember, if you're a little older, there was a book called Diet for a Small Planet. It came out in 1971. And the pitch was that you could be healthy and eat vegetarian and save the planet at the same time. What could be better than that? It's both a health argument and a moral and ethical argument at the same time, because Francis Moore LePay wrote the first book to note the environmental impact of meat production as wasteful and a contributor to global food scarcity. She argued for environmental vegetarianism. Now, this 1971, we're talking 45 years ago, almost. And she said that vegetarianism means choosing what is best for the earth and our bodies at the same time. It's a daily action that, quote, reminds us of our power to create a saner, better world. And it's been updated by her daughter, Anna Blythe LePay. There's a new book called Diet for a Hot Planet. The notion is that, global warming, climate change, and we need to alert people to the hidden environmental and social impacts of our food choices. So it's basically, they come from the premise that vegetarianism is better for your health, okay, which, controversial notion. I talk about this a lot here in this program. I personally believe in diet that incorporates animal protein. And at the same time, we'll save the planet from the ravages of the high carbon footprint that we're creating with greenhouse gases. Okay, so as I said earlier, you're entitled to your opinions, but you're not entitled to your facts. And an amazing article just came out this month, in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, which suggests that our views about greenhouse gas emissions and foods may be all screwed up. The foods that top the list in terms of the amount of energy required to make them and the greenhouse gas emissions they produce are actually, get ready for this, fruits and vegetables. And fruits and vegetables, they're labor intensive in terms of processing, transportation. Imagine, when you get a grape this time of year in the Northeast, or a banana, there's a lot of energy involved in getting it to your table. Yeah, it's vegetarian, but it's not a low energy proposition. And the storage, these things need to be cold stored. And the story, they're very, very perishable. And so in the summer, they need air conditioning and cooling. And in the winter, they need to be kept warm so they don't freeze up. And so the environmental cost of fresh fruits and vegetables is rather high. They also point out in this article, quite interesting, that some of the foods which are lowest in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, like processed foods made from corn and containing a lot of sugar, these foods are the lowest in terms of nutrient density. The very foods that are highest in nutrient density, and I don't just mean meat. Meat is certainly high in nutrient density. It provides protein and fat and a lot of it. And humans from time immemorial have sought out meat at the top of their food chain, the most preferred food, because it's something that allowed us to evolve from spending all our time and energy foraging for berries and leaves, literally climbing trees to find food, to civilized society. And foods that are processed are bereft of nutritional value, but they're very low in terms of their impact on greenhouse gas emissions. So this article is bound to stir up a controversy. They say, contrary to some assumptions, the most nutrient-dense foods don't have the lowest carbon footprints. Okay, well, we know that. The lowest greenhouse gas emission food patterns had one-third more added sugars than did healthier alternatives. By the way that agricultural subsidies work in this country in particular, high sugar diets were also the cheapest, most economical diets. So in 2015, we're going to push back against this notion. You're going to see a big debate in Congress because the Republicans control Congress and the administration wants these rules, these environmental rules, to influence our food choices. And a lot of Republicans are going to say, hands off. We don't want ideology to enter into recommendations about food choices. We want to make Americans healthy. But this whole thing about environmental impact of foods, that's not necessarily established fact or scientific settled science. This year, actually in the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking to Nicolette Hahn Nyman, who's written a book called Defending Beef, The Case for Sustainable Meat Production. Her background is that she's an environmental lawyer and a former vegetarian turned cattle rancher. And she writes in this book why including animal protein in our diets, that is organically raised, humanely raised, pasture-raised animal protein that is good quality, can be a healthful part of our diet. And in addition, minimizes environmental damage and ultimately has little impact on this concern about climate change via greenhouse gas emissions. So it's a very, very interesting debate that's going on. All right, finally, something to keep in mind this year is that hugs can be beneficial for your immune system. So make a resolution in 2015 that you're going to hug someone every day, because instead of an apple, a hug a day could keep the doctor away. This, according to research at Carnegie Mellon University, what they found is that in 404 healthy adults, hugs were associated with a reduction in stress and an enhancement of the immune response. So make sure that you find somebody to hug, because hugs resulted in less severe illness symptoms in individuals, whether or not they experience conflicts. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be back in just a moment with some New Year's resolutions that you can keep.